Justin Senior, thanks so much for joining me. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
So we've heard from some doctors that basically there's a crisis in the hospitals. There was a surgeon at Advent Health, not one of the safety net hospitals, who tweeted earlier in the week that Central Florida needs a field hospital. What's your assessment? Are we in a crisis in Central Florida or in Florida as far as safety net hospitals are concerned?
You know, hospitals certainly are really busy. The number of patients has been climbing dramatically over the course of the last 5 weeks. And in some parts of the states, the actual census now has passed the records for COVID patients previously set last July or last January. I would definitely say that Orlando is somewhat of a hotspot. Jacksonville, Orlando, and then the Dade County and Broward County line, Memorial Healthcare System, which is one of our members, definitely is seeing a massive influx. Others, they're certainly seeing significant numbers, but not necessarily record numbers like they were seeing last year. You know, hospitals have a lot of strategies that they can employ to increase their capacity as well as to free up their staff. So not every one of those strategies that I'm aware of has been employed so far. And I think that hospitals are hopeful that this particular surge is starting to peak and hopefully can start going down in the next week or two. But again, if it does continue to go up, it is going to really stress the hospital capacity of the state.
At the start of the pandemic last year, there were field hospitals put in place, and it turned out that most of them weren't needed, but they had that extra capacity just in case. Are we going to see that again? Are we going to see a need for field hospitals or kind of extra capacity built on site?
That's a possibility, but I don't know that there are that many hospitals in the state of Florida that are there yet. I mean, the first thing that most hospitals do if they're going to try to increase capacity is they're going to start postponing in whole or in part their scheduled procedures, things like hip replacements and knee replacements that, while they're medically necessary, have the potential to be safely postponed maybe for 4 weeks or 8 weeks. And we've definitely seen a lot of hospitals do that. If you did that statewide, what we saw last year, when all hospitals were required to postpone their scheduled procedures, was that frees up probably between 20 and 25,000 hospital beds in the state of Florida. The state itself has about 60,000 beds. So that frees up quite a lot of capacity. And now I think a lot of hospitals are kind of working with that capacity that they've created. You can also cross-train nurses. You can do staff augmentation, which could potentially increase your capacity. You could potentially also start moving in the Orlando area, moving some of the normal pediatric patients to an embedded children's hospital like Arnold Palmer or a standalone children's hospital like the Moores, so that you would have more capacity for adult COVID patients. Because one thing that we're seeing is that only a very small fraction of a percentage of these current surge is pediatric. You also could create what these kind of disaster medical assistance team sort of units, which are tents and temporary facilities that you could bring in to staff that could create more capacity for you. I don't see a lot of that yet. And again, Advent is not a member. I'm not aware of any of my members having made that request at this point. Not to say that if the numbers don't continue to rise, that's not something that they would do.
You mentioned pediatric patients. I mean, one thing to note, or one thing that has been noted about the Delta variant surge, is that there seem to be more pediatric patients than there were with previous iterations of COVID. So does that change the equation a bit?
There has not been a surge in pediatric patients that has changed the equation at this point. What we've seen in our hospitals, and our hospitals are in many instances standalone children's hospitals, or they are hospitals that have very large embedded children's dedicated facilities, things like Joe DiMaggio Children's Hospital, Arnold Palmer Children's Hospital all around the state. So we see, I think, more pediatric patients than most general hospitals would. And we're only seeing about 1.5% of the patients overall that are coming in are under the age of 18 or 18 and under. So it's a very small percentage of the patients who are pediatric. The 18 and under population is probably 20 to 25% of the population in the state of Florida, maybe 21, 22%, somewhere in there. They're barely 1% of the patients here. And so that's actually a silver lining that does give you some flexibility in terms of trying to create capacity and working with pediatric providers to try to free up capacity for adults.
What do you need then? In your assessment, what does the state need to do? What does the federal government need to do? Because from what frontline staff are saying, it does sound like things are not great at the moment in terms of the influx of patients.
So the first thing is that this puts an immense amount of pressure on staff. So what happens is hospitals are part of what they do is infection control. And everything in the hospital is designed around infection control, from the ventilation systems and separate airborne infection isolation rooms to the intake process, to how they don and doff personal protective equipment. And frankly, even the metal alloys used in the fixtures are designed for control. This is a particularly infectious virus, and it's really, really puts a lot of stress on the staff in the intake process, in donning and doffing personal protective equipment, in being careful with their hygiene. It really takes processes, even like food delivery, that normally take only 10 or 15 minutes to deliver food to a floor. If there are COVID patients on that floor, that food delivery person has to don and doff personal protective equipment as they enter and exit every single room. And takes a 10-minute, 15-minute process, turns it into a two-hour ordeal. It's a really high-stress environment. So staff is definitely working overtime. Some of our hospitals have asked for staff augmentation or have sought from agency staff augmentation. But I will say it's a little bit different when it comes to what this pandemic was back in January last year. You asked what are terms of assistance from the federal and state governments. The biggest key here is going to be communication around staffing needs. If staffing needs start to really, if you start to have a patient census that really blows well past your staffing needs, it's going to be important that the state and federal governments have a strategy to help the hospital augment their own staff and work with it. In terms of what the state of Florida did last year, there were really, really, it was an intricate logistical conundrum last year in terms of how you handled the patient load, because the patients last year were very old and very frail, often living in nursing facilities or in assisted living facilities or in independent living facilities that catered to frail elders. And when you discharge that population, you had to make sure that that population was COVID-free, or else they would go back into an environment, spread the virus, and bring it back. That caused the state of Florida and the hospitals to really have to work together to make sure that when someone didn't need to be in the hospital anymore, but was still testing positive for COVID, that there was a place for them to go, that you could create COVID-only facilities where someone that didn't need to be in the hospital anymore could convalesce until they didn't test positive for COVID anymore, and then you could send them back to their nursing facility or assisted living facility. There was so much planning that went into that to make sure that we were not, as hospitals, discharging people into a situation where they're going to make the problem worse. Now, the actual age of the population is in its 40s and 50s for the most part, because the elderly population in the state of Florida has largely been vaccinated. Because of that, the discharge process is a lot easier, and a lot of the logistics that were required last year aren't as necessary this year. The key now is going to be staff. You can't overwork your staff. You've got to make sure your staff stays at the top of its game, that morale stays high, and that you don't overwork them, and that you have the staff that you need to serve the population that's showing up.
Okay, so how are you going to get those staff? Like, that sounds like it's going to be a squeeze point in the future, in the near future.
It could. One other thing that was happening last year that's not happening right now, I know that there's a lot being said about the staff not being 100% vaccinated, and that's technically true. But there is a pretty high vaccination rate among frontline workers. One thing that was happening last year is that when COVID was spreading like wildfire in the community, our staff works in the community. They catch it just like everybody else. They come in the morning, they test positive, they get knocked offline. And that was actually pulling staff away and putting them in quarantine at the time that you needed them the most. Because there's a very high percentage of physicians, frontline physicians, over 90%, I would think, as well as frontline nurses, those numbers probably closer to 50 to 70%, who have been vaccinated already. And some of the ones that haven't been vaccinated may have already caught it, so they do have some natural immunity. You know, we're getting fewer staff members knocked offline this time around, so their own staff is a little bit better able to handle the influx. If the numbers continue to rise and hospitals around the state need more staff, That's a matter of communication with federal and state authorities to figure out where that staff can come from.
One of the big stories last year, too, during the surge, or even before that, was the demand for PPE and other things too, like ventilators. How are hospitals in the safety net hospital network doing now? Do they have enough of the equipment they need?
Yes, they do. I actually asked about their supply situation yesterday, pulled all of the CEOs of all of my systems and did not have any code red. We need the following, or we're, you know, not masked, not anything. They have what they need. There has been, in the state in the last 10 days or so, our hospitals had some frustration around oxygen. They started to run low, and they were getting their deliveries, but the deliveries were kind of sporadic and they tended to be just in time. And it was a little bit more of a white knuckle experience than our CEOs were really willing to stomach. And so there's been discussion with the State Emergency Operations Center and good communication. And that has been, you know, is in the process of being ironed out, but nobody's run out of oxygen. And they're kind of smoothing out the supply chain with state officials right now. And it's been, I think it's bearing fruit. But nobody's run out of anything, and there has not been any shortages of any other supply, that appears to be, you know, systemic at all.
What's your message to staff at the hospitals then? What do you think is the takeaway for them?
Yeah. Really it's a matter of appreciation of everything that they do. What they've done an incredible job in this pandemic. And the state of Florida has had a better than the national average fatality rate, better than the national average confirmed case fatality rate, and better than the national average deaths versus expectation over the course of 2020 and early 2021. And it's a testament to the hard work that they put into it. If you told someone in 2019 that a pandemic was coming that was going to disproportionately take the lives of people 65 and over, you would have thought Florida was going to be well above the national average in terms of fatalities, because we are one of the oldest states in the union. What they have done logistically and the work that they put in for their communities has been extraordinary. They should be thanked. I know that they're going through a very, very difficult time, but what they've done has been amazing. And hopefully, you know, we're going to see this start to turn down in terms of the number of cases and in terms of the number of hospitalizations soon, that maybe there is going to be a little bit of a reprieve here coming shortly. If not, I think all you can say is that the hospitals will do everything they can to make sure that they're not overworked, that they're properly treated, and that they maintain, you know, the top level of treatment to the patients, and that the hospitals will do everything they can to augment the staff as this goes forward, if it continues to get worse. But I think that there's definitely hope that it will get better.
Just thinking about those numbers too, I mean, fatalities versus expectations, that doesn't take away from the fact, though, that there is still those raw data, right? I mean, we're still kind of closing in on 3 million cases overall across the state of Florida and 40,000 deaths. And I think there was some hope, I think, earlier on, like last year, that we could flatten the curve and not be approaching that level by now.
It's really this particular wave and the size of it and this new variant and the contagiousness of it, I think, has caught a lot of people by surprise. It has overwhelmingly affected, in terms of hospitalization, it has overwhelmingly affected the unvaccinated. And yet the unvaccinated adult population, which is primarily who it is, that's only probably at this point 5 or 6 million people of the 22 million people in the state of Florida that are responsible for almost the entirety of this wave. So it's really surprising. And so, I think it's disappointing that this didn't work out, you know, the way that everyone was hoping, that we'd reach a certain vaccination threshold and this would, COVID would sort of quietly go to the background. You just have to deal with what's in front of you. And hopefully in the coming weeks, we have seen another silver lining of this, which is that people have gone out and gotten the vaccines. You can see the numbers going up in the state of Florida in terms of vaccine doses per week. And if you look at the underlying data to that, what you'll see is that it is overwhelmingly now first doses and not second doses, which is the indication of a vaccine initiative that is ramping up, and not one that is winding down. So that's a silver lining as well. And hopefully that continues, that as we pull more and more people to safety, if you will, from hospitalization and from becoming a fatality, we'll get into a better and better position. when it comes to, you know, the numbers that I said around confirmed case fatality rate, overall fatalities per capita, as well as deaths versus expectation, Florida does continue to outpace the national average on those. And if you age adjust those statistics, so you compare the size of a state 65 and over population to its 65 and over fatalities, its under 65 population to its under 65 fatalities, Florida actually moves very close to the top in terms of its performance here. And again, I have to commend the staff and how hard they've worked and how hard they've planned and worked with state emergency management officials to try to put the logistics in place to get the best result for the people of the state of Florida. And I think we just have to keep plugging away. And I can't express my appreciation for what they do enough.
Justin Senior is the CEO of the Safety Net Hospital Alliance of Florida. Justin, thanks so much for your time. Appreciate it.
Thank you.